Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hi there. I'm Laura Wasser, and if anyone knows how much divorce sucks, it's me. I've been practicing family law for over 25 years, and I've worked on thousands of divorces, from the top of the food chain all the way down to my very first case, which was my own divorce when I was 25. It has become my life's mission to destigmatize divorce and create a community around what is already a difficult time. We call it the evolution of dissolution. So welcome to the Divorce Sucks podcast, where we talk about breaking up, getting divorced, and moving on.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hi. Welcome to the Sunny Side Up Report. I'm Laura Wasser.
I'm Johnny Rains.
And we are joined by our friend from high school, visiting from up in the northern Canada. Leslie Paul. Some of you may know her better as the
royalty.
1986
yes.
Beverly Hills High School homecoming queen.
Dun, 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 dun. God save the queen.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So happy to be here with you.
So, Leslie, the Sunny Side Up Report is where Johnny and I talk about things that have happened during the week in regard to relationships. And the first thing I want to talk about today, because it was not included in my file, was the fact that our friends, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and his longtime girlfriend, Lauren Hashian, got married over the weekend.
Congratulations to them.
One of the reasons I like this couple is that they've been dating for over 10 years. So they really did know what they wanted. They actually were going to get married last year, and then Lauren found out she was pregnant with their second little girl. They've got a 3-year-old and a 16-month-year-old. And they got married in Hawaii over the weekend. So mazel tov, as they say in my tribe.
Very nice.
To them. Next, why celebrities, from reality stars to A-listers, fake their marriages.
Yeah, why do they do that?
This is from Vice.com, yeah. And it was written by Allie Jones. And, you know, this is something that used to happen a lot in old Hollywood.
Yeah.
They would have a couple that started dating, and they would kind of get media attention. I don't know. Did you read the article?
Of course I read the article. I read everything you send me.
Okay.
So this fake wedding business is perhaps predictably something of a trend among reality stars and influencers. They talk about Brody Jenner and Caitlyn Carter, who had a marriage, and now they're deciding to amicably separate. There was also Gina Davis. There are several that are cited in this article, but I was surprised to hear that celebrated actress Gina Davis admitted in a deposition in 2001 that her wedding to Reza Jarahi was not legally binding.
I don't think that was in 2001.
Well, that's what the article says.
Okay.
Vice.com wouldn't lie to us, would they?
I don't know. Sharon Osbourne says Ozzy cried after learning of son Jack's divorce.
I mean, I don't really know what to say about this one, although it is, I guess, quite sad because he experienced such pain when he got divorced, Ozzy Osbourne, that when he learned his son was getting divorced, he was really sad that he might go through the same kind of pain.
Right. And Jack and his ex-wife, Lisa Stelly, finalized their divorce in March. They've got three kids, I think?
Yeah, three
okay.
kids.
Ozzy, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, Jack did say, what's best for our family right now is that we separate lovingly and we remain best friends who are committed to raising our children together. We are disappointed but feel confident that we will continue to grow our relationship as co-parents and best friends. And I thought that was really cool. Thing.
Yeah, and I also think it is interesting the impact that a divorce can have on all family members. We always talk about how it's going to affect your kids, but
yes.
It also, of course, affects
your
parents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, next, this is from The Root on grapevine.com. Anne Brannigan tells us that Black-ish creator Kenya Barris files for divorce from Rania or Rainbow Barris after 20 years of marriage. And I kind of think I heard that Black-ish is based on Bo's life.
A lot of the storylines, and actually there's a new spinoff coming out about just Rainbow's life.
They call her Bo.
Bo,
just
yes.
So you know.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. You're up on the boss-up news, I see. The Associated Press reports that Barris filed for divorce last Friday in L.A. Superior Court on his 45th birthday.
Oh, God.
They have six kids together, too.
Six kids. Oh, good luck, guys. Next, the Bill Cosby update.
Uh-oh.
wife halts divorce, doing this shocking thing instead. What's the shocking thing? This comes to us from the International Business Times, Danielle Long.
Yes, so she wants to renew their vows. Now, how is that for some kind of weird, sick, like,
Wait
diabolical
a
thing?
Don't judge. No,
well,
don't judge.
I don't know.
I'm judging.
Yeah.
I just think I'm going to say nothing. I think it's odd, but you know what? She's standing by her man.
I guess in love knows no bounds. So none. I take back my judginess.
All right. Worried your spouse might think you have an unhappy marriage? This will help. From fatherly.com, written by Jeremy Brown. Johnny, to improve your communication with your spouse that might help you avoid divorce, the only way to know is to ask.
Absolutely. So they talk about in this article by Jeremy Brown different things that men can do to let their wives know that they care and that they're interested in how they feel. Starting out when you return from work, opening up the conversation with...
the bottle of wine.
Let me tell you what happened to me today. What do you think about this? Saying I love you. It's really good advice.
Is that what you do when you get home, Leslie?
It's just back to basics.
Back to basics.
That's the where the wine comes out.
Wine first, and then the questions.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, how long have you been married?
20 years, July 3rd.
Oh, God.
Another thing that I think is very important in long relationships is to thank your spouse for what they do.
Did you do that, Leslie?
Thank you, honey.
I'm sure Mike Scully's listening right now.
H-U-N-Y.
How about this on the last page where, I don't know, I mean, if you two are female, I'm male, and, you know, we always are talking about the gender disparity.
Thank you for stating the obvious, yes.
What would you say if one of your, like your boyfriend or your husband just kind of came up to you and said, can we talk about why you're unhappy? Like, do you think that would ever happen in your relationships?
It would never happen in my relationship.
That's the difference between being in a relationship for 6 years and a relationship for 20 years. You'd be like, sit down and we better get some more wine.
Talk about why you're unhappy just out of the blue, or if I came in and I seemed a little bit snippy.
Sometimes it's best to go straight to the heart of the issue. The emotions your wife is feeling can run much deeper, and the only way you're going to fix it is to figure out how far down those roots go. Make sure she knows that you're coming from a place of empathy rather than judgment, says Adina Mahali, a certified mental health consultant and family care specialist. You can't force someone to be happy, but sometimes just knowing that your partner cares enough about your happiness can be a big step in the right direction.
I think that's true.
All right.
For sure.
Finally, and this is for all of our about-to-be-marrieds.
Yes.
How to survive your wedding when your parents are divorced. Refinery29, Natalie Gill. It seems that the answer is to consider not inviting them, as the rarity, it seems, are the divorced parents who can put their adult child's happiness ahead of their own.
Surprising.
I don't agree with that.
Well, this is for what they are pointing out in Refinery29. Of course, they go to the most extreme cases.
Right. And again, it can be definitely... It can definitely be trying to have a wedding and plan something when your parents are no longer married. But I'll tell you, I had a wedding and my parents were great. They both walked me down the aisle. They were lovely. I think this is before either of them had gotten married again, but they were with the people that they ended up married to. And I think that people can put their children's happiness ahead of their own and just kind of suck it up for the wedding. And if you can't, maybe parents... You won't get invited.
Right.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Because you know what, Johnny?
Tell me.
And Leslie?
What?
Divorce doesn't have to be disastrous. And to prove that point, coming up next, two people who finally decided to say, f*** it, got divorced. And I'll tell you, because I pre-recorded that episode, they seem to be much happier with the decisions they made. We've got Catherine Gauthier, also someone who went to elementary and high school with us, and Steve Kane on the show today. As sad as it may sound, the truth is, love may not always conquer all. Circumstances, personalities, and of course, the contract you and your spouse entered into on your wedding day may change. And not every couple is able to adjust to that or to weather the storm. There is a silver lining, though. Divorce, not generally a happy episode, can today be a better process resulting in a better outcome than at any time in history. At the very least, it can be good enough to keep yourself, your sanity, and your wallet and your dignity intact, and your children safe, sound, and emotionally healthy. On Divorce Sucks Today, you're going to hear firsthand divorce stories from two different people, each of whom never thought they'd end their marriages, until things changed. If you listen to the Laura's List episode of Divorce Sucks, you'll recognize my first guest from the Index on It's Over Easy. And for those of you who haven't listened to that one yet, do it. It's a 5-minute download, and we'd love to know what you think. My first guest is one of Manhattan's elite residential brokers. She's ranked in the top 50 of realtors in the USA by the Wall Street Journal. She is the executive vice president at Douglas Elliman Real Estate in the Big Apple, which is the largest brokerage in the New York metropolitan area and the second largest independent residential real estate brokerage in the U.S. by sales volume. In addition to that, she's one of my absolute besties in the world. Welcome to Divorce Sucks, Catherine Gauthier.
Wow, that made me feel good.
I know. We pump you up.
Feels good.
And I mean, you probably wouldn't say this, but I'm going to tell everyone this. You've transacted over $2 billion in career sales for your clients. That's kind of amazing. Catherine and I not only went to El Rodeo Elementary School together, then we went to Beverly Hills High School together, and then we went to Cal together, and we were roommates for a while at Cal. So we've really known each other for a very long time, and I know her really well. I know how like discerning she could be about like in terms of her aesthetic and all that kind of stuff. And also, when we were at college, we met her husband. So they dated, literally they were college sweethearts and dated. And here's how I mean, again, I probably wouldn't have said this 5-6 years ago. Yeah, I would have maybe said it 10 years ago. It was doomed because she didn't tell me she was getting married. They eloped. I wasn't at the wedding. And that is probably a really bad sign. I'm just going to say it on air. Good. I've been lying to get that out for a while. So you guys were married for how many years?
We were married for 13 years before I separated.
Okay. And 2 amazing children from this match. And by the way, I love her ex and I love her kids. But sometimes people just grow apart. You grow in different directions. It didn't work. You'll tell us more about that. But you were about to say from the time you separated to the time you got divorced. How long did that take?
3 years.
Now, what's up with that?
No, it was dreadful. Honestly, I mean, and the part that's the hardest part about that is that there was never a question about 50-50 custody. It was
right.
Never even, it was not, the kids were the priority. So unfortunately, what became messy was the dividing of the asset, of the not wanting to let go of certain things, of certain lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And so that you guys know, again, Catherine was the breadwinner in this family. And I have had so many female breadwinners come to me and be like, okay, you know, this isn't working anymore. This is a partnership. I'm not feeling the partnership. I'm having resentment. I'm having, you know, I'm losing respect, whatever. And then when I explain to them that they're still going to end up having to pay support and, you know, half of their assets if it's in California and even child support, they're like, I thought I was getting out of this.
Yeah.
I'm not getting out of this at all. I'm still completely bound to this person. Explain a little bit about how that felt.
Okay, so that was definitely eye-opening. I really didn't think about that. I thought that the state would look at the situation and actually grant it in my favor, a little bit more lenient.
Again, these are 2 people who both had degrees from a great, great university, and he had an MBA.
From Columbia.
Which she paid for. So, you know, I mean, listen to this, and it's not just gals, guys too. Although for some reason the expectation is if the gender roles are switched, it's like, well, of course you're going to pay for your wife.
Right. And that there was a little bit of that, and I did have to keep reminding myself that. But I think that the hard part was that this was definitely a motivating factor for me in my divorce. It was really the breakup of the partnership, quote unquote, was really that I didn't feel like I had support. And mm-hmm. I felt like I was carrying all the weight. And at some point when you're doing that, and true, this is advice to men and women. When you're doing that, when you're the sole person, you get a little resentful. And
right.
then you start, things start to deteriorate from there. So that's really what happened to me. So the eye-opening experience and the 3 years that it took to actually get divorced was winding that down. Now, in retrospect, had I just embraced it and dealt with it from the beginning, it wouldn't have taken 3 years. I could have found some way in which to expedite that. But I think the relief from it all is that now there's an end date.
Right.
So my takeaway from the whole experience is that I now have the clock is ticking.
Right.
Whereas before, I felt
a drowning sensation, this is more of an uplifting sensation.
You mean the clock is ticking on support payments?
Correct. Sorry.
Like when
yes.
it will end.
Yes.
You guys are divorced now.
Yes.
Okay. So there you have a date. It's locked in. You know when it's going to stop. You know
yes.
when child support's going to be done because your kids age out. So
yeah, there's an end in sight. Whereas before, like I said, I thought I was drowning.
So how did you know it was time? I mean, I think you were the one who initiated it.
Yes.
Okay.
I was the one that initiated.
And so there's like a chapter in my book called, you know, How Do You Know? So how do you know?
I think the way that I really knew is that when it was about 3 years before I separated, that I said to myself, wow, nothing's going to change. What am I going to do about that? Do I stay in this? Do I try to make a change? And honestly, it was a conversation that I had with my father where he said no. And that was a big one for me because my parents have been married for almost
right.
60 years.
And they're old school.
Old school.
Yeah.
And he just said, no, you don't stay. If you don't feel like you're having a partner, if you don't feel like you can go to the end of the mile with him, then it's time to go.
Right.
Like, you got to take care of yourself first and foremost. And it was another thing that my sister said, too, which was, you know, it's like when you're on the airplane and they say put the oxygen
yes.
oxygen mask on yourself first before your kid.
Right.
Well, I did. That's
right.
exactly what I had to
you
do.
You took care of you.
I knew I had to do it in order to be a better mom, to be a better daughter, to be a better friend, to be better all around. There was just no option.
And sometimes getting that permission from someone else, whether
yeah.
it's a family member, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a clergy person, is kind of what you need, because you're going to be looked at as the bad guy. And I know your husband looked at you as the bad guy. You
Correct.
Were the bad guy. You still may be the bad guy. So
yeah.
How'd you tell them? How'd you tell the kids? Did you guys tell them together?
We told them together. We waited. We had a period where we were nesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids didn't know, but, you know, it was kind of clear and evident. We I would leave when he had them and he would leave when I had them.
What do you mean they didn't know? They didn't notice one of you was gone?
I mean,
you travel for work.
We traveled.
Okay.
You know what I mean? We made excuses for it, right?
Okay.
So we let that kind of sit for about 6 months and then we both sat them down. And honestly, the reaction was laughter.
Right.
They didn't know what to do with it. So
right.
then it was, whoa, you guys are laughing. And then it was a sink in. And then it was relief. My daughter pulled me aside and said, I'm so glad.
And how old are they at this point?
So she was, let's see, she was 12,
mm-hmm.
and Walt, and he was 8.
Okay.
So they were young.
And that age, guys, is in my experience, those are some of the toughest ages, that
yeah.
preteen. They know what's going on. They know what's happening. They're not babies. And this is the age that I hear from a lot of, because I have kids that are that age and older. And I see what happens with them and the kids in their classes. That's the age they start to kind of freak out about, is this going to happen? And so I'm glad that we have an example of somebody that it happened and kids are fine and everybody's moved on, which is fantastic. Explain to our listeners, I think a lot of them know, but what is nesting?
So we kept our apartment in New York City. And when one of us had the children, the other person vacated. So we had a separate apartment.
Got it.
That he would go, he had his own apartment and I had my own apartment. And we would go to those places. So that happened not only leading up to telling the children, but then we continued that for another year before we sold the apartment.
And so many people I talk to are like, especially in New York, where it's a kind of smaller square footage to deal with, are like, I could never do that. Tell us how that worked.
You know, at first, again, like I said, I thought it was an important thing to do before we told the kids to get our feet, you know, to get our bearings, to know what direction we were going in. It actually was very difficult on me. I actually hated it, and I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
Say why, because I think so many people come on here, and it's all like sunshines and rainbows and whatever.
No. You know, it's really, really tough. Well, first of all, it's the space that you used to share together.
Right.
Right? So you're in and out of a bedroom that you used to share together.
Right.
So every time I would come back into that bedroom, I would have a sense of dread and
right.
gloom. And then there... the parts that really bothered me was that when I came back, something was out of place.
Right.
Something was amiss.
Right.
The milk was gone. You know, it just became a catty roommate situation.
Right. Right. And again, I mean, and there do, if you guys do this, there have to be boundaries. I mean, you can't bring somebody else into the bed or the, you know, that's totally uncool. Yeah. You do your out nights for that kind of stuff. I've heard horror stories, not from Catherine, about like coming back and then there's condoms in the trash or there's somebody else's lipstick next to the bed. Not cool, guys.
No.
You do that on the off nights.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, looking back on it, was it better for the kids to do it that way, though?
You know, I want to say yes. And I think that is a real yes, not a fake yes. But again, it was so difficult on me that I don't know in the end if it really was good because they would see it in me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I couldn't wait to get out of there.
Right.
So it wasn't like a safe place.
Right.
But what I did do when I got their new apartment, when I got the new apartment, I did everything the same. I took this, I put the same wallpaper on. I put the same color of paint on. I did the same thing for them so that when they came back to that new apartment, it felt like home.
Okay.
I didn't make a radical change.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, here's your new room.
Because for kids, a lot of it is about transition. And I've worked actually with a lot of dads who, when they are replicating or, you know, getting the new room, they say, should I do the same or different? And it depends on the kids.
Yeah.
Some kids really want that sameness. And some kids really embrace the fact that they're going to have two different houses with two different situations. One of the things I've noticed that you guys have done very well, and I think this might be, you know, maybe it's not until there's some kind of a crisis or something that you can actually get back together and work on the same page, is co-parenting of a teenager. Tell us a little bit about that, because I haven't seen you guys cooperate as much as that. And it's, again, it's not a crisis. She's not doing, thank God, knock on wood, but she's a teenager. I've got one. Catherine has one. And we commiserate with, you know, the vaping and the experimentation. And, you know, in New York, everybody takes Ubers when they're probably, what, 12?
Yeah.
Okay.
It starts at 12.
California, not as much. You know, the parents that I'm friendly with get together and say, like, should we do this and can we track them, whatever. So tell about how you and your ex have been able to effectively co-parent and really keep each other abreast of what's going on in terms of your teen daughter.
Yeah. And I think that that's really important. And I think kids can kind of use the whole divorce thing as a means in which to get away with stuff. But with me and Sam, we're very much on the same page. So when a situation arises, we loop each other in. We do not trust what she says. We back it up with what he or I say. And when we had certain situations where we had to step in together, we did. There was no, you're not going to pull this over my eyes. You're not going to keep this from dad. You're not going to keep this from mom.
Right. And we are really, a united front.
Yeah. And so she knows that. And it was interesting to me because I think for sure her freshman year this year in high school, I think she was trying to push those boundaries.
Right.
I think she was trying to think, ooh, I can get away with this.
Right.
And she couldn't.
Right.
So we did unite. And we are, and it's, you know, in those moments of doing that, I remember why I was in love with him and why I chose him as a partner. So we're doing that right.
Right.
That's the one thing that we're doing right.
That's amazing. And again, it does. Sometimes it takes time, you guys, to kind of get back to that place of, oh, this is why I like this person. And remember, you have a kid with that person. And that kid is going to have, if not half, some percentage of that person's DNA. This is the other person in the world who cares as much about your kids as you do. You've got to figure out a way to connect. And sometimes it's really difficult at the outset. But when the dust settles, this is what you're left with. And I do have so many people that say, if only I knew then what I know now, whether it's about the nesting, whether it's about when to separate, whether it's about how long the process should be. And that's why we have this show. We have this show so that you guys can listen and we can give you some of the wisdom of our experiences. Generally, there are no lightning bolts or magical signs to tell you when it's time to get divorced. When the bad starts outweighing the good on a consistent basis, you may feel that taking the next step is appropriate. It's a very personal decision. And for those of you teetering on one side of this decision or the other, pay close attention. Joining us next to share his divorce story is a new friend of mine. He's an entrepreneur, investor, and the divorced father who wrote and titled my favorite book title ever, F*** It, Get a Divorce.
Get to Old Navy Saturday for 50% off all sweatshirts, frost-free puffer vests for $15 for adults, $12 for kids, and leggings, just $8 for women, $5 for girls. Saturday at Old Navy. Valid 10-5, select vests only. 50% off excludes in-store clearance, active and licensed.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get the True Cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate TrueCash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. The name of this podcast is Divorce Sucks. But divorce actually doesn't have to be that way. I'm your host, Laura Wasser, and today you're listening to the real-life divorce stories of one incredible woman and one dynamic man. I want you to know that you're not alone in this. We've been speaking with Catherine Gaudier, a top realtor in New York and a newly divorced mom of two. And now please, allow me to introduce you to Boston-based author, entrepreneur, investor, and a divorced dad who penned the book, F*** It, Get a Divorce. He's a managing partner and a co-founder of Game Theory Group, and he's the founder of GetHappy.life website, which is full of free divorce content with a masculine edge, including a divorce and breakup cookbook for dads. And he's on the phone with us today. Welcome to Divorce Sucks, Stephen Kane.
Hello, it's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your story, your personal journey, and the reason you decided to write this amazing book, because I think it really, so many people seem to be on the precipice, and as I was saying in the earlier segment, a lot of them say, like, if I knew then what I know now, you're giving them a little bit of, you know, a forethought of what they can be thinking about and what they can expect.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's a good summation of what I hope to accomplish with the book. I was married, you know, technically, from the I do to the judge saying it's over, 23 years. Before that, my ex-wife and I had dated and lived together for a couple of years. And on balance, I'm happy to say, that marriage was one of the best things of my life. It ended poorly.
Okay.
We could have done a much better job of acknowledging that it was over and acting responsibly and taking advantage of the fact that we live in a modern world where we can break up and be civilized and be amicable and be loving, but we didn't. We ended up in marriage counseling and spent a good amount of time there and made, you know, what I would submit is the worst mistake anybody could possibly make in that setting. We decided to stay together, despite that we had talked quite openly that we both felt that the marriage was over and that, you know, divorce was probably the right course for us. We convinced ourselves that it just wasn't the right time and that maybe we needed to wait longer for the kids and that we had appearances to keep up. You know, the list of stupid bad reasons is long. It didn't feel that way at the time. So we did stay together for a number of years, and that turned out to be what I can only describe as a pressure cooker.
Oh boy.
And made right, and very similar to some of the things I've heard your previous guests talk about or other guests, that, you know, that you basically end up in a situation where you're going through the motions. You're acting the part.
Right. And by the way, that's the good part. That's like in the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is, and I've had people say this, you know, after that, after it's all been said and you decide to stay together and try to make it work, one part of it is just kind of phoning it in, going through the motions. But another thing that happens in some instances, you really start to hate the person. So what could have been done amicably 3 years before, now you're really pissed.
Amen. Well, I mean, that is exactly what happened to us. And so we ended up having this, you know, kind of raw and tough breakup. And, you know, again, I'm happy to report that similar to things I hear you talk about all the time, that time passes and it's entirely possible to go back and remember, you know, why you thought that other person was special and why you were so happy to have them be the parent of your children, et cetera. You know, my ex and I have gotten back to that place and everything is kind of, you know, very amicable and co-parenting is smooth and everything now. But boy, oh boy, did we go through a really terrible period. And that really prompted me to do a bunch of soul searching and to reach out to my personal network and talk to all sorts of people who have lived through it and kind of gather their experiences to help me think about what I was going through. And the result was that I really, really felt strongly that there was a need for this book that I did end up writing to try and help people make that incredibly hard decision while understanding that, you know, divorce, you know, not only need not be a tragedy or a war, it shouldn't be a tragedy or a war. And that, you know, lucky us, we all live in the modern world where we have all sorts of options available to us. And that, you know, breaking up or divorcing, you know, we shouldn't view it as breaking up a family. We should view it as reorganizing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. And right. So that's the book. That's why I sat down and wrote it.
And I mean, it is so interesting that we still have so many people who regard it as a failure or this devastating incident. So much so that you offer the incognito version of your book, which I think that's hilarious. Right. Explain to us how that came about.
Okay. If anybody is interested in buying my book, I'm happy to tell you that if you are in a situation where you would feel anxious about leaving a book lying around at your cubicle at work or in your house with the title, you know, get a divorce, good news, you can buy the exact same book with what I call the incognito cover. And the incognito cover, it looks like a book called Everyday Meditation and Gardening with a very... I'm glad you think that's amusing. So
I love it so much. And by the way, just so that folks know, it doesn't say F it. It says F star 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 it. Okay, so you're not going to, if you don't get the everyday meditation and gardening version, it still isn't going to offend people, but for the fact that it says divorce. On the flip side, I have had many people tell me that they have purchased my book or other divorce books solely for the purpose of being able to leave it around somewhere. They have no intention of getting a divorce, but they want their spouse to know, oh, yes, I've read this and it's on my nightstand just in case, motherfucker. So that is very funny. Why do you think it is that, and you said that you have this advisory board of relationship experts, what have you been able to glean from men and women? But I would love the male perspective because I know you do a lot of that, including the article that you wrote for Fatherly. Why do dudes find it to be, I feel men will stick in sometimes no matter what. They will just, this is my life. This is the path that's been, you know, laid for me. And I'm going to stay there because my parents were married for 75 years. And I'm going to stay with my wife because that's the right thing to do. And marriage would be a failure. Where does that come from?
Okay, that's a really good question. If I could, I'm going to break that up into where does it come from and maybe where does it go to and where are we today? Because I don't think they're necessarily the same thing. But I think that in generations past, men felt that even where they felt very committed to the family and the marriage, very much even in love with their spouse, deeply, you know, kind of invested in the whole situation, that, you know, men felt independent of the family.
Right.
And I think, right, and so I think that men felt like, not that they could have their cake and eat it too, but that they could live their lives on parallel tracks, and that even in a world where the home life and the marriage maybe was less, you know, rewarding or, I don't know, warm or stimulating, whatever word you want to use, then maybe that man ideally had hoped for, you know, that was just some percentage of his time in his life, and that maybe it was not even the majority of his time in his life. Maybe, you know, he really identified more with his work and his office and in his profession or whatever it was. And so he really felt that, you know, sticking through it was less than optimal, certainly, but not a massive downgrade of his life.
Right.
And I think that that's, you know, changed. Just, I mean, that's, it's a little bit of an overstatement, but that's like if any of us have watched this series, Mad Men, you know, it's kind of like that would have been the era where that was the most common way, I would argue, for a man to think. And ever since then, it's become, you know, less and less and less. You know, now, I'm not sure that that is even true now. I want to caveat that by saying I still think that a huge number of people, as you, Laura, point out all the time, a huge number of people, you know, suffer under this delusion that there's some kind of stigma associated with divorce, some kind of scarlet letter, you know, that is, you know, once received can never be taken off.
Or that their kids are going to be irreparably damaged by this. Oh, we're staying together for the kids. And they don't realize that kids seeing parents in the situation that perhaps you and your wife were after you both called it, like, this is not working, but we're going to try to make it work.
Yep.
Or as Catherine was saying with her husband, I knew them during that time. Kids want to see happy parents, even if the parents are alone, not sustained resentment and disdain, you know, on an everyday basis.
I can't agree with that more. And I don't think we can say that enough, because for me, it's like, it's a common sense test. Do we think that children are happier if their parents are happy or if their parents are unhappy? I mean, the answer to me is obvious. They're happier children if they have happy parents. And that doesn't require the parents to be living under the same roof. It doesn't require their parents to be, you know, sleeping in the same bed. It doesn't require their parents to be, you know, holding hands. It doesn't require anything other than it requires their parents to not be at war. I mean, you know, parents that are, you know, whether they're married or divorced, parents that are at war with each other, you know, that's very, very challenging, difficult, maybe even traumatizing to a child to experience.
Absolutely.
But as long as the parents, right, as long as the parents aren't at war, then the children are content. And social scientists have been studying this for decades now. And the data, I would argue, is very clear on this point, which is children of marriage and children of divorce have more or less the same distribution of life outcomes, with the one caveat that a child of divorce that is used as a weapon in a war or as a rope in a tug of war or has a front row seat to some horrible war, that child may have a more incidences of, you know, depression or unhappiness or you know, negative outcomes. But absent that, the outcomes are exactly the same, married or divorced. And the other, you know, kind of common sense test that I would ask anybody who's on the fence on these subjects to think about is, you know, take a look around. Next thing, go to your child's, you know, school and take a look around at the other kids in the classroom, or go to your church or your synagogue and look at the other kids and the other families and ask yourself, you know, is my child living in some pristine wonderland where they don't even know about divorce?
No.
Well, no. They're surrounded by divorce. They're surrounded by, you know, gay couples, straight couples, you know, interracial couples, happy couples, sad couples, divorced couples, single parents, you know, widows, widowers. They understand that life is a, you know, it's a poker game, and we get dealt a hand and we play the hand, and some outcomes are X and some outcomes are Y, and they have children, friends that are living in a household that's gone through divorce or remarriage. I mean, pretty much the good news is our children are brought up in a world of tolerance and acceptance, and we don't have to act in any certain way by any kind of old historical standards or fear of stigma. We just have to act like, you know, reasonable human beings. I think that's where we have to end up.
Words to live by. I totally encourage you all to get this book. There's cool humor and relevant, timeless wisdom on ending and then beginning again. Also, just this past May, in the Fatherly Voices column, Steve wrote an article, "Your marriage will probably end in divorce, and that's totally fine. If we could admit that marriage is rarely forever, we'll save so many from stress, anguish, and the guilt-ridden, shame-inducing delusion that divorce is a failure." And I love that quote. I mean, Steve, I got to ask you, do you believe that human beings were meant to mate for life?
No.
Yeah. I mean, you evolve. That's what happens. And God bless you folks that have been married forever and found your one true love and it works. No, mad props. That just is probably not the norm.
Yes. I mean, if I would add one other thing, which is, you know, people forget, you know, that Social Security benefits start paying out at 62. Why is that? Because in the 1930s, that was the average life expectancy of a man.
Right.
So the government just set that age where they didn't have to pay out in the majority of cases. Well, good news, everybody. That's no longer the average life expectancy for a man or a woman. We're all going to hopefully live to be 80 or 90 or 100. We're all going to have active minds and bodies and sex lives and intellectual pursuits and wonderful things. Lucky us who live in the modern world. You know, if you're unhappy at 40, or 50, or it doesn't even matter, it's 60, like, wow, you're sentencing yourself to a long, long, long life of misery.
Exactly. Till death to us part meant something quite different back then.
It was kind of literal back
yes.
then. Now it's just, I mean, again, what you said, people who find their soulmates and stay together for life, God, I'm jealous. That sounds awesome. But for the rest of us, you know, it's almost certain that it's not going to last 50 or 60 years.
Right, right.
And so act accordingly and act responsibly and act for the benefit of yourself and your spouse. If you're going to be happier divorced, odds are your spouse is going to be happier divorced. And odds are almost 100% that your children are going to be happier if you and your spouse are happier.
Absolutely. My divorcee bestie, Catherine Gauthier, is joining Steve, who's a divorced dad, and I now in studio. And I want to ask both of you this question. Catherine first. Was your divorce worth it?
Yes.
Steve?
Can I say, hell yes, with an asterisk. With an asterisk. And the asterisk is that it's not a zero-sum game. That doesn't mean that somehow I got something over on my ex. If she was on this line, I think she would also answer hell yes. It was good for both of us.
Yeah. And again, I say this to clients all the time. It's rare in a divorce matter that one person or the other wins. Like, judges don't award everything to one side or whatever. You have to be doing something really, really horrible. I mean, again, like, you know, being institutionalized or having a severe drug and alcohol problem to not have joint custody of your kids. And in terms of division of assets and support, the law's pretty clear. Like, I didn't get to be where I am in my career because I'm any great mind. It just is a rational way of thinking about it. So the win is when both parties come away without having destroyed each other or spent so much money in attorney's fees. And so asking if it's worth it, I think both of you would say it was worth it to me, and I'm speaking on behalf of my entire family. It was worth it. Steve, what's the number one divorce tip you would share with our listeners?
I quote that wonderful old song, free your mind and the rest will follow. You're not breaking up, you're reorging. You're not ending something as much as you're beginning something new, and you want everybody involved to have the best possible beginning, not just yourself.
I like that. How about you, Catherine?
I like that a lot. I think the big thing is don't lose sight in the fact that change is hard. It's really hard to change. And when you make that decision to make a change, it takes a lot. And just give yourself that breathing room of knowing that change takes time.
Fantastic. Now, I saved these last few minutes together so I can swear you both in for the divorce sucks interrogatories. You can both answer, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Catherine?
Yes.
Steve?
Yes.
Okay. We know you're both divorced. What's your relationship status now? Catherine?
I have a partner now.
And Steve?
I have what I call a VSO, a very significant other.
I like that. Okay, Steve, what's your favorite breakup song?
Can I cheat and give you two? One is a song called Trouble by TV on the Radio, which has these alternating voices, which is, oh my God, it's horrible, it's doom. And then the other voice sings, everything's gonna be okay, everything's gonna be okay.
Oh, here comes trouble. These people talk too much.
Which was my experience, and I've loved that song ever since. And then, you know, just to a happy song, an oldie, Ding Dong by George Harrison, which he sings over and over again, ring out the old, ring in the new, ring out the old, ring in the new.
Ring out the old, ring in the new.
I love it. I love it. Catherine, how about you?
Mine's a little bit more specific to one artist. I listen to Mary J. Blige, I swear to you, all day long, all night long.
And with us, you'll always know the deal. We've been too strong for too long. And I can't be without you, baby.
On the subway, singing it, dancing. I needed something to make me move.
She got you through it.
She got
Mary
me through
J.
it.
Okay. And Catherine, what would you say to cheer up a friend who is going through a breakup?
There is light at the end of the tunnel. Don't worry.
Steve, probably get a divorce,
huh? Yeah, I would agree with what Catherine just said, but I would also tell somebody, look, talk to your divorced friends. You definitely have divorced friends. And ask them a simple question. Do you wish you had not got divorced? No matter how bad it was or how rough it was or how smooth or whatever, do you wish you had not got divorced? I would humbly submit the 99% of them, maybe 100%, will say, no, of course I'm happy I got divorced.
Right.
Okay. That'll be you someday, too.
That's very interesting. I have yet to speak to anybody ever, friend, client, anybody that said, oh, I wish I wouldn't have done that. Very interesting.
Right.
All right. And finally, Catherine, which romantic comedy could you watch on repeat?
Oh, my gosh. I'm completely drawing a blank right now. I've watched it over 100 times, and I watch it with my son, which is really the funny part.
Who's in it?
Oh, my God. How can I not?
All right. We're moving to Steve, and we'll come back to you. Think about it. Steve, what about you?
Okay. Well, I'd like to give a massive shout out to a relatively new show called Fleabag, which is on Amazon. It's a 30-something woman, one of the most talented writer, comedians, actors, romantic comedy, crazy, wonderful, can't recommend it high enough. Going back into the oldie file, there's a Something's Gotta Give.
Oh, my gosh, that's what it was.
Oh,
with,
there you go.
With Jack Nicholson and Diane Keaton. Yes, I've watched it over 100 times. It is the best romantic.
Me too, Kat. Me too, Kat. And that movie tears me up every time.
I can watch it. I can start watching it in the middle, in the end, rewind. I love that movie.
And by the way, Fleabag, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is who stars, and I believe she writes it too, right? Doesn't she write it or produce it? She's great, and it's really, really good. And both of those movies, absolutely. And yeah, you guys are good. Steve, thank you for calling in today. And Catherine, it's always lovely to see you and put you up in my back house. Thank you both for sharing your divorce stories with us today. Tell our listeners, where can they find you online, Catherine?
Element.com/hash, whatever that slash thing is, K-A-G.
Okay. And what's your Insta handle?
Kag, K-A-G-T-K-W-K.
It kind of looks like the Keeping Up with the Kardashians one. So whenever I pull it up and I see something of you or your kids, I'm like, wait, they're on the Kardashians? Okay, so Kag, T-W-K. And Steve, how about you? Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is at Stephen Kane. Stephen with a V, Kane, K-A-N-E. And then the simplest way is the website that I created for my book, www.gethappy.life.
And you can get the book on Amazon.com, Get a Divorce, the incognito version or the regular version. The rarity is the sudden epiphany or single turning point showing you with dramatic clarity that your marriage is over, although that does happen. Most relationships hover on a precipice for years before one party or the other finally decides to say, it, I want a divorce. Whether you decide to stay or go is up to you. But we're trying to arm you with the tools that will make either decision easier. I'm Laura Wasser. This is the Divorce Sucks podcast on Podcast One.